bit about. So this is, so there is this super determinant, feedback determinant, and then minus k over 3, that's the cap, the Keller potential, and then there are the F terms, which, so that's the D term, and the F term would be, well, I write it as a D8, the integral, but then remember that this is equivalent to having a chiral, a chiral-like projection. So, plus emission conjugate. Now, well, let me write this in the alternative form, which if I use that identity, I said we could write this in the following form with this chiral compensator, and then you have this chiral projector times e to the minus k by 3. So this form would be like writing the d2 theta bar as a d bar squared, and then using the identity d bar squared is this stuff here. And the rest. And this also I can write in using the same identity that as V6Z times the phi cubed times W of, so this is a function of chiral scalars. This this codify is the chiral compensator for you. Plus and value. Now for certain purposes, which we'll discuss later, it's useful to observe that this has a wire invariance, provided you introduce an additional field which is called a wire compensator. And let me introduce that also here. So I'll call this the straight phi. And here I get a phi cubed. And if I introduce this here, it's losing here phi bar. And this is a phi cubed. And if once I introduce this, you see that this action has a wire invariance. Now the fact is that the Biaki identities and the torsion constraints that we impose have this wire invariance. It's just that without introducing this, the action is not manifestly wire invariant. So this is invariant under the following transformations. I introduce this wire transformation superfield, which is a chiral superfield. So alpha dot tau is equal to 0. The action is invariant, and the chiral superfields phi don't transform, but these guys transform. So this one has minus p tau times phi. And I take the curly phi to transform into the plus 2 tau. The field binds also transform as e to the, so this guy, so this is m with an alpha here, theta bar, well, I don't know how many I need to. So these transformation rules, I don't want to write them out completely. I mean, there are some derivatives of tau here as well. And similarly, there's a transformation rule for this guy. which is a total cluster bar times EMA plus stuff. What's just useful for us is that this guy, the superfield bar determinant transforms these to the two tau cluster bar. The k is invariant because the phi is invariant, and you see the phi and phi bar compensate for the transformation of the field bars. And similarly here, this guy, well, it's easier to see from here that this one doesn't transform that, but this is a little bit more complicated because there are also transforms. But in this form, you see that these two compensate each other. So under this, so there's a bunch of, well, this is also important. Let me write this out. So the covariant derivative, the alpha, with an alpha here, transforms with tau minus 2 tau bar times the covariant derivative, and then dot means dot, the ellipses means terms involving the derivative of tau, which I won't bother writing down. So this is the invariant of this action once we introduce the wire compensator. Observe that the action also has invariance on the Kähler transformation. Which is that k going to k plus f plus f bar, where f and f bar, where f is some chiral field, holomorphic. It's holomorphic in so in these guys. This depends only on phi. This begins only on phi bar. Therefore, it's a chiral field. So remember that in global case, this thing is, you had an integral like, I'm sorry, d4 theta times k, okay? And this was invariant by itself. The Kähler potential did not transform. That's because the d4 theta integral, the d bar, d theta bar integral will annihilate that guy, and the d theta bar will annihilate the second guy, so that is invariant by itself. But that's not the case here. So here we need to transform the w as well, and w transforms as minus f times w, and then you make the chiral compensator transform as e to the the y compensator transform, like that. That's the Kähler transformation properties of that action. Of the fields. The action is invariant under these. Transformations can be gauge fixed in different ways. So, for instance, the previous action corresponded to putting earlier without this chiral compensator. What we had done effectively was to gauge fix the phi to be equal to 1. Alternatively, we could gauge fix the curly phi to 1. So as I said, the introduction of the Weyl compensator is to make this invariance manifest. It's the constraints of the theory, the identity, etc., all obey this transformation problem, this Weyl invariance. So this just makes it manifest. Okay, so So let's now derive the potential, or at least the F term part of the potential. Is there any questions? So let's rewrite this just as we did before. But before we do that, there is one point which I should make, which simplifies calculations considerably, and that is this business of splitting the superfield bind determinant into this part which depends on H and the part that depends on the phi. And the point is that all the physical degrees of freedom, the curvature, and so on, and the covariant, the connection, and so on, they essentially depend on H. And so when you're calculating the potential, we really don't need to worry about the connection pieces and the curvature pieces. Okay. So essentially what I'm saying is that to calculate the potential, so effectively this is like saying that we can calculate the potential by just considering conformally flat spaces. So can ignore connection curvature pieces, and that is to say we can set effectively just take the superfield bind determinant to be phi times phi. Okay, we ignore the, well, we can, well, we can proceed in one of two ways. As I said, we can proceed this way or that way. I think what I've done is to, and I mixed up my notation. What I did earlier was to set this to equal to 1, and what I have to do now is to set that equal to 1. Okay? Sorry. So I can do this transformation, go to this, go to, No, I was right. I was right before. What I had done before was to set that equal to 1. What I'm doing now is set that equal to 1. So, so essentially you can ignore these H-dependent pieces and rewrite the action as in terms of, well, so this means in terms of just the chiral compensator field, which I have set equal to 1 now, but then I have to, these I have set equal to 1, but then, of course, I cannot set both equal to 1. So I need to keep that guy. So that means that the action I'm dealing with in order to calculate the potential I can just use this guy, which is the phi bar times e to the minus k over 3 plus the integral d 6z phi cubed, which is phi cubed times w phi plus vanishing conjugate. So this trick is discussed in chapter 8 of GRS. Okay. So once you do that, this is now And remember, now, ignoring the connection pieces means that all these covariant derivatives can be replaced by the usual global covariant derivative. Okay, and this is an enormous simplification. And so now this deriving the potential is exactly the same calculation as what we did in global superspects. So except that we have this additional field, so you need an additional equation for that. You have to derive the F term for that, and then substitute back, and that's what that of course is what makes the difference. So let's just derive the equations of motion. So,
Shanta, before you go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to understand. So we're ignoring connection and curvature.
Yeah.
In a lot of places, but for instance, if somewhere in there I had a conformally coupled scalar field, does that mean I'm going to ignore that term?
Conformally coupled scalar field.
Like, I'm not sure how I would.
No. It doesn't. If I have a piece which is coupled to that one, no, yes, because that's not going to contribute to the potential.
The potential of?
Of the chiral scalar.
Are you saying a chiral scalar can't be such a, have such a couple?
So you are worried that so in a constant curvature background, points of view would have a. I think this is geared to a situation. Can I couple the conformal? So you're worried about the supersymmetric question or something like this?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. First of all, I don't know whether that can be supersymmetric, but maybe it can. But I don't know the answer to the question. Okay, so if I vary with respect to phi, and well, we replace this by d6z and with a minus, so d6z, and then I have the minus a quarter d bar squared acting on. So replace the d2 theta bar integration by d bar squared. So that's essentially like the second line there, except that I replace the del bar by the d bar and ignore the r, because that's an h dependent piece. So taking taking the variation with respect to that, well, this is exactly the same calculation as before. So you have this phi bar, so del phi goes through the d bar, so e to the minus k by 3. And this is equal to phi squared times w, and then the variation with respect to the phi gives me minus quarter d bar squared times phi bar times e to the minus k by 3 ki. So derived with respect to phi, and then I'm replacing phi by a set of fields phi I. Okay, and this is equal to minus phi cubed times w I. Now it's just a matter of working through these and identifying the F terms. So let's ignore fermions because they are not They won't, they're not going to contribute to the potential for the apparent scalar. So when you act on this, so I don't distribute the derivative, I just act with the d bar squared on this, and then I with the d bar squared on that. Right? Because if I distribute the derivative, I get fermion patterns. So this becomes, so this bar, this acting on that gives me the Fi bar, 9 e to the minus k by 3, and evaluate it at, take differentiate and then evaluate at theta equals theta pi equal to 0. Okay. So that's that, and then Fi bar, I bar by 3, F bar, I bar, times e to the minus k3, so that's with this guy acting on this, no, acting on that. And then I have another one, which is phi by bar e to the minus k by 3, so that's acting on this guy, gives me a k I j bar times f bar j bar. And then I have, this side I have phi cubed y. Okay, and I just solve these. Oh, sorry, the second one gives me, so this one gives me, so this guy goes through that, and then I have, let me rewrite this in this way. So let me keep these guys together and rewrite this as minus a quarter d bar squared phi bar times e to the minus k by 3 times ki, and then I have this guy acting on that.
I think you jump between equations.
Yes, I have. I jump between the two equations. So this guy gave me this one and this was phi squared times w. Everything is evaluated. So that's the first equation. Sorry, guys. And then the next equation is this guy acting on that, on this pair, and then acting on that. So that is phi plus phi by bar times e to the minus k by 3 times k j bar times f bar j bar, and that's equal to minus phi cubed times wi. Okay? So now you solve for f, for the fi and for fi. That should be the topic. Yeah, sure. Solve for that, and for this guy you substitute back from here. Okay, as phi squared w. Okay. Then you end up with so F bar phi F bar phi bar is e to the k by 3 times phi squared w plus 1/3 phi bar times k I bar let me write it up the second one after I make that substitution for the first term gives me minus phi cubed times w times k I times k I j bar, the inverse metric, times e to the k by 3 over phi bar minus phi cubed over phi by bar times wi times k ij bar times e to the k by 3, which these two can be collected together. Now we find this covariant, scalar covariant derivative, which is diw plus ki times w. You see that this thing is equal to, so these two things can be collected together and rewritten as minus phi cubed over phi bar times e to the k by 3 times k and j bar times diw. Okay. Now let's evaluate the potential. So the potential, as I argued right at the beginning, can be evaluated from any one of these three terms. It's easiest to evaluate it from one of the F terms. So minus V is simply the d2 theta of phi cubed times W. And you just keep the bosonic piece in this evaluation. So this is the same thing that's the same thing as minus a quarter d bar squared acting on this. And now you just work this through. So d bar squared acting on this gives me the f term of phi, and d bar squared acting on the w, you derive the w, and then gives you the f term of phi, of phi j, okay? Big phi j. So you work through that, and so this is 3 phi squared times the f term of phi. Times W plus phi cubed times WI times FI. Okay, there are this plus numbers on it. Okay. And now what you need to do is to substitute for F and phi from here. FI is solved here. Okay, so plug those in, and this is trivial algebra now, and let me just read it out. This is e to the minus k by 3, e to the plus k by 3 times phi squared, phi bar squared times k ij bar diw times minus 3 w squared with a minus sign. Okay? So basically we just did follow what we did for the global case. The essential simplification was just arguing that you can replace these covariant derivatives by the spread d's. And so then you solve for the F terms and substitute back. So this is still not in the final form. This is not, the point is this is, we are not in Einstein frame. So if you want to get Einstein frame, remember that if we had kept our remember the Einstein term came from the D term, which looked like this, dhz times phi times the phi bar times this guy here, which was this h dependent piece times e to the minus k by 3. And to get wireframe frame, you choose, so we just need to get the bosonic part of this in the root GR form. And remember, so the one here gave me the root GR form, but of course it's still multiplied by this exponential. So what we need to do is to take fiber at theta equal to theta by equal to 0 equal to e to the k by 6 at theta equal to theta by equal to 0. Okay? And once you do that, we have these are all evaluated now with theta equal to theta by equal to 0. In other words, these are all the scalar components of all these superfluids. So then we have this thing too. So there's a pi squared pi bar squared, which bring this up to e to the k. And so you get this finite form, which is di w dj bar w bar k j bar minus 3 w squared, which I can also rewrite by introducing this scalar invariant potential, which is k plus log of mod w squared, which I can always do away from zeros and singularities of w. And you can rewrite everything in terms of g, di, g, d. Well, this is now the ordinary derivative, minus 3. So that's the FM potential, first derived by just going through the component analysis. It's a horrendous calculation, much, much more difficult than this, derived by Kramer, Julia, Scherr, Manfroy, and Van Nieuwenhuizen, and Girardel. So this is the potential, the extent potential for supergravity, kind of fields in supergravity. Now let's discuss including, yeah.
What do you mean by selling time? I mean, you get something? You don't get fixed about the vertex.
No, so this is like choosing, this is choosing, it's choice of a conformal gain. It's like doing a conformal transformation. Okay, this is only for the scalar component, right? We are picking the scalar component of this guy to be equal to that. So it's a transformation of the matrix, which brings you to the yes, it's a field redefinition.
Okay, another yeah. question: what happened with the indices in the last
line? How do they match? Oh, I'm sorry. Gij bar is the same as Kij bar because the difference is sum of analytic and anti-analytic functions. Okay, so now let's talk about gauge fields. Okay, so we want to gauge the isometries of the scalar potential. And so we introduce a gauge. Right, so the gauge field is introduced in terms of the free potential, which is V, which is a real scalar field. So V is now VA, TA, where TA runs over the gauge group, or over some gauge group. And the corresponding gauge field strength but this can also be done in the global case, but let me write down the full formula. So, which is a minus, so this is a chiral field, which, so you have this chiral projection, minus 2R of it. So this is written in terms of, so this would be the ordinary D bar, and this would be the ordinary D if running global superspace. As I mentioned before, the V, remember, is if I go to Wesselmino again for an unabelian gauge field, also I can go to a Wesselmino gauge, which means those initial components can be set to zero in the Wesselmino gauge, and then you are left with the physical components. And then, so there is the gauge field, the usual gauge field, the gauge Eno, and then there is the hash component, which is for the D term. WZ gauge. And similarly, the components of this guy in the same gauge would be start with the lambda alpha, then the field strength, and the D. Okay, so so under gauge transformations, the V goes to a V prime, where this is defined by E to the V prime equals. So as before, the gauge group needs to get complexified because the gauge transformations are defined in terms of chiral superfields. As a phi, so for the moment, just think about, linear transform. If I assume they are linear, transform linearly, then the phi field transform like that. And phi bar e to the V, in order to construct these invariants, it's useful to observe that phi bar e to the V transforms like phi bar e to the V times e to the minus of lambda. So for instance, phi bar phi will therefore phi bar e to the V phi will be an invariant. Okay. So the gauge field, so in addition to the terms that we had before, except for the replacement of phi bar with phi bar times e to the V, we have in addition these gauge kinetic terms. So the gauge interaction terms come through the fact that phi bar shifted by that. So you have dHz or E over 2R. Again, remember, using the identity, you can rewrite this as a manifestly chiral term. So I can, in general, introduce some function of P fields which are neutral under gauge transformations, like this. Gauss emission conjugate. So this is, or incidentally observed that this is while invariant and with V going to, so without any conformal, without any wild compensate field, this is while invariant and with V being neutral under wild transformations. Because W alpha, so this guy transforms like, well, if you put it in chiral form, note that this guy transforms like the curlify cube, okay, and the W alpha transformation then which is minus 3 tau times. So curlify transform with e to the plus 2 tau. So if V goes to V, the W transforms like that. And that's because of the fact that there is this covariant derivative in the W which transforms. Okay. So so that's already a well invariant form. So If you just go to the bosonic components, then this first term gives you the F square terms, and the second term, so the first term gives you bosonic piece here is that this is a minus a quarter of integral d4x root g times real part of f times the f mn f mn. And then the imaginary part, minus a half, okay, minus a half times the imaginary part of F A B times the FF dual piece. So this is like, this is an axion coupling, and this is the usual gauge field term, except that now the gauge field coupling can depend on some chiral moduli.
Sorry, what happened to the indices on F?
Oh, I'm sorry, that's okay. So we will have a B here. Okay, so now you can derive. So now we need to derive the expression for the D term. So in deriving equations of motion, it is a useful trick is to define this delta V equal to e to the minus V times delta of e to the plus V, which is V plus So using this, I won't go through details. I think I have more details in my notes, but let me just cut this short. So this thing here, this variation of this guy, so, and let me, for simplicity, let me specialize to the global case. there is no essential difference. As I said, in any case, in deriving the potential, I'm going to, it's going to look like the global case. So if I take the variation of this guy and claim with respect to V, but this is, this is just some little bit of manipulation gives me that this is the V A times delta alpha F A B times W alpha B, where this delta alpha is e to the minus v times, this is the gate covariant delta. Okay, this is not, so that's why I said that I'm going to global case. It's but if I'm doing supergravity, then I would have to include the connection for the gravity connection also, Lorentz connection also, but so in other words, this would be the earlier delta alpha which I had, but in global case, this is this derivative here. So the equation of motion term is just the alpha FF, AB times W alpha B. So if I have nothing else but pure gauge, then this would be the equation of motion. For later use, let me also write down the transformation of the infinitesimal transformation of V just from here. This is I lambda minus I times e to the minus V, minus I lambda tilde, where lambda tilde is I times e to the minus V times, times lambda dagger, or lambda bar times e to the plus V. Okay, so now I need to derive the F terms, the D terms, the presence of this, with the gauge field, for the gauge fields, and the presence of this chiral scalar piece. So the full action now which I'm dealing with is this. So as I said, I replace the k of phi and phi bar by k of phi and phi bar times e to the v. Okay, rather than the transform for variance, both. That one transform is the inverse of the other. So phi bar phi, for example, would be an invariant. In addition, I can add a phi Leopoulos term if I have a generator whose trace is 1 or trace is non-zero, then I can add a term like that. So that's automatically invariant in the global case. Remember, the global case is a D4 theta integral. And this one transforms into a chiral plus an anti-chiral field. So it gets annihilated either by the d2 theta or the d2 theta bar integral. In this case, things are a little bit more complicated because this is coming up in the exponential. So let me write the action. So this is minus 3 times dhz times there's a phi bar and a phi. You can think of the phi either as the chiral compensator, as the y compensator, or as the chiral compensator. It's just a matter of which gauge you choose. This is minus 1/3 k of phi and phi bar into the v plus psi times trace v. And then you have the F terms, which are d6z, so let me write it in terms of the chiral, manifest the chiral notation, as d6z times the phi cubed w, and then I have the gauge field kinetic term, which is fhd times wa times wb, plus conjugate. Okay. And now, from the invariance of K, gives me so requiring that this be invariant gives me the following equation. So I take infinitesimal transformation. And I have e to the I lambda. So I derive with respect to where this k with respect to v. And then I have, and that's the transformation of V. And then I have K. Then I differentiate the K with respect to the gauge field. And then I have the gauge field transformation, which I will write as a Killing vector. Right, so that's, so delta phi, delta capital phi is lambda A, Ka, I. Okay, is some Killing vector plus similarly this term for this guy I bar times k I bar, and this stuff should be equal to zero. So that's simply the statement that that the derivative of k is zero. And so this translates to, so if I pick the coefficient of lambda, then I have K by dV. A is equal to I K A I times K I. Okay. Now under the gauge transformation, the Paglia plus term transforms to psi trace v plus psi times trace of I lambda bar And to make this invariant, we need to make the theory invariant, and that we need to make the chiral compensator or the Y compensator transform. So these things need to transform. So we make, in order to keep, make the D-term invariant, we make this guy transform as e to the I raised lambda times psi by 3 times phi. Okay, that clearly leaves this guy invariant. But now if I transform this, I need to make the W transform. I'm transforming the W, this guy is transforming. So the W should transform. And so requiring that phi cubed W is invariant, you get 3i, so from the transformation of that, of the phi, you get 3i lambda A times trace dA times psi by 3. Phi cubed W plus phi cubed times lambda A times K and A times DIW. So that's a variation of the W, yeah? And this should sum up to zero, which means that we have this useful relation, K A DIW is equal to minus I psi times trace dA times W. Okay, so now let's, now we need to, work out the equations of motion. We need to get the expression for the D term. We need to eliminate the D term. So we have to look at the superfield equations, including the gauge fields. So let me write them down and then discuss them. So we have M. Minus a quarter. So first we have this same equation that we had before. So from varying the phi, you have this. It's convenient to go to introduce this field G. It just saves a lot of writing, but let me introduce. So in other words, let me shift from K to G, which is K plus log of W squared. So this is equivalent to just replacing K by G and setting the W equal to a 1, okay? So then you have, so this is e to the minus G by 3 equals phi squared. These are the same equations I had before. And then I have from the variation of the gauge field, e to the minus g by 3 times a quarter delta squared gi, the same g, equals minus pi cubed gi minus a quarter. Well, so this is the same equation I had before, except now the f can depend on the gauge field, on the chiral scalar, so I need to include that times W alpha A B alpha. And finally, the gauge field equation, delta V equation, which is minus phi bar times e to the minus G by 3 times IKAI times GI, where I have, in this term, I have used that relation which I had here. And then so this would be a variation with respect to V, which I'm using, for which I'm using that relation, plus a half the F, so this is the equation of motion piece for the gauge kinetic term, and then I have its complex conjugate. Okay. So the D term can be obtained from here. So by setting, as usual, you set from the supervised equation of motion, if I set the theta to theta bar equal to 0, then I pick up the Haas component. So this one picks up the D term, and I get, from the third equation, I get that twice the real part. So this one plus that one gives me twice the real part of FAB times DB equals this guy, which is IAAI times GI. Okay? And if I re-express in terms of the superpotential, this is the same thing as the Keller derivative, PIW over W. So these are evaluated now at theta equal to theta by equal to 0. And if I use also the relation which I derived earlier, this guy here, I can rewrite this last term. So remember, this is diw plus kiw, and in the second term the w cancels, and the first term for diw I use that, and so I have this equal to I times kai times ki plus psi times trace of okay, so I just use the fact that the D term is defined as, so D term for the gauge field comes from this, and I just use that. So in this equation, these are basically same as before, except for this term, but this is this new equation. And so all I've used is the invariance of the, I've used this Keating equation here to relate the derivative with respect to V to this derivative of the K or the G. So now notice that if away from points where W equal to 0, if the F term is 0, so if W is not equal to 0, so away from 0 to W, DIW equals 0 implies that the D term is equal to 0. The last form, of course, is the standard form, which is quotient and textbook functions. And this is obviously valid away from even at 0 for W. So at flat, if you are looking for flat supersymmetric vacua, for instance, if they're F flat, doesn't mean that they are necessarily D flat. But if they're supersymmetric and ADS, then they are the D term would vanish. So then the next step is to get the contribution to the potential. From there, so now you just look at the W squared term, in which I guess I have erased. Yeah, right, this term, yeah. I guess I don't want variation anymore. So I can evaluate the contribution. To the potential from here, so you have what? So V will give you a contribution which is minus that evaluated. So I can just take in the bosonic piece here. So this again you do the usual trick of distributing. So this d2 theta is a d squared, and the d term is what you get when you go when one of them hits here and the other one hits here, and you take the symmetric piece. So you need the d a w a piece. The d alpha w alpha piece. Okay. So this gives me a half real part of F A B times D A B B. And so finally, I think I use curly B for potential. So finally, our expression for the potential is this guy. Plus detail contribution. Which is half the real part of F B times dA dB. Where the d terms are given by this formula here. Okay. So this formula is the starting point of all supergravity and hence superstring phenomenology. So the next thing I want to discuss and that's left is the question of the generation of non-perturbative terms in the effective potential and relation to wild anomalies. Now we argued that we have this wild invariance of the classical local wild invariance of the action, but this invariance. Are there any questions? But these transformations are anomalous because they include an R transformation, which are chiral transformations, which are anomalous. We need to cancel that anomaly. What I want to discuss are these one loop effects and how they generate these Veneziano-Yankelevich potential. So the standard Landau normalization theorems tell you that the superpotential W is not renormalized in perturbation theory. However, they can get renormalized non-perturbatively. So I want to show how these comparative terms that people use, KKLT use, for instance, but long before that, it was used first by Dine, Rohn, Seiberg, and Wedden in the context of the heterotic string to stabilize the delta. So how these things arise from this formalism that we have discussed so far. So Y transformations are quantum anomalies. So for instance, if I put we put this to be some constant superfield. So if I write this as I times nu, then and if I look, so remember that phi goes to phi, but when I project out the, say, the fermion, the fermion would transform because the fermion is projected out by taking out by acting with the del alpha, which does transform. Okay, so you see, so if you put this in there, you find that and work out what the fermion transformation is, that the fermions, these kind of fermions, transform like that, and lambda alpha transforms like this, minus 3 I nu times lambda alpha. Where this is the fermion in the chiral scalar, and this is the fermion, this is the KG node. So the anomaly can be thought of as coming from the non-invariance of the measure. Ahala Fujikawa. In other words, the functional integral measure d phi bar dv will transform according to Fujikawa as under such a chiral transformation will transform like this, I di nu times 3 times Ca over 16 pi squared. Times, well, Fujikawa just wrote the FF dual piece here, but you can generalize this. What you have to supersymmetry, and in fact, this generalization is effectively what's called Konishi anomaly, although, once I remember when the interligator was giving lectures at TASI and Rochet was in the audience, and he mentioned. He called this a Konishi anomaly, and which it was subtract because it's in his book. So that's another thing which is in the book and was rediscovered. So this is so in the full supergravity form, this would be this generalization would look like this: a alpha plus function conjugate. I'm abusing the notation, I'm ignoring the trace, and now this A is running over gauge groups. Okay, not the generators now. So there is a trace to be understood inside here. Okay, so that's a trace over the over any given gauge group, but then I have some over gauge groups, whatever gauge groups are coming in here. And the CA is the anomaly coefficient, which is the chiral anomaly coefficient, which is T of G minus, which is the Dinky index of the group, minus TAR, where TAR is just a representation in so TA. Is the square trace of the square of the generator of the group Using TE for both the generator and, probably something else for 30. Trace squared in a representation R of the gate group pair, okay? This means the trace in the joint. So that's the nominal coefficient, and now we need to, if you want to make this preserve this while, if we want to keep this local while symmetry, which for the consistency of the theory we need to, we want to cancel this transformation of the measure, and the way to do that is to replace f of a, replace f a of I by f a of I, so this is the gauge coupling function, minus 3CA over 8 pi squared times log of phi. And then you can check that since phi transforms under the y transformation, phi transforms as e to the minus 2 tau phi, that, and this, so this is multiplying the w squared term, okay? So the transformation of this guy up in the exponential, of course, will cancel the transformation of the measure. Okay. So now assume that suppose that one or more that one of these gauge groups develops a mass gap, becomes confining, so then below that confinement scale at some scale lambda. That's not the gauge transformation, sorry. So if you assume that some gauge group confines, then you can integrate out those heavy fields below that scale lambda and get an effective theory. For scales E less than lambda, we integrate out this gauge group. All the fields which are charged under that group. So then you will get some effective action for which will be a function of the fields which are neutral under the gauge group, and we have the chiral compensator, and whatever other gauge fields there are which are not confining. So this would be some integral over the gauge group of e to the minus a quarter times integral f phi minus the 3CA over 16 pi squared. 8 pi. Log of phi times w squared term. Okay, but then if I look at the superpotential term in there for big phi and little phi, we know from the violent variance that these must, the F terms must come in the form, F phi cubed, I'm sorry, straight phi, phi cubed times something. So if I have a phi cubed term here, then if I get a phi cubed, then I should, by exponentiating that, get an e to the little f there. So the phi cubed turns up. So essentially, I'm generating an unperturbative superpotential, which is some constant. It may depend on other fields. Phi cubed times, so it's just, I need to preserve this combination. So this becomes phi cubed times e to the minus 8 pi squared over CA times FA of phi. So if there are several gauge groups, then you will get a sum of terms like this. Several gauge groups which are confined. Okay, so this will obviously be a contribution to the Taylor potential also, but that's not that important because Taylor potential in any case gets corrections in perturbation theory. But this piece here is what's been used to stabilize certain moduli. I mean, this is, yeah, historically, well, going back to the 80s, people used these terms to stabilize the dilatron, for example, in the heterodic string theory. And if you have more than one confining gauge groups, then you have a sum of such terms, and then you can get what are called racetrack models.
Sure.
Okay, well, I'll stop there. Questions? Yeah?
You can think about the logic there. I thought the anomalies are defined as something that cannot be cancelled by a local quantity. This looks like a local quantity.
Well, it depends. I mean, you cannot without, well, first of all, I mean, this is a field which the wire transformations, well, they are local transformations, but if I integrate out the phi, of course, this would look like an unlocal term, right? But the full theory, it's like adding an additional field, right? And
in the theory with phi, there is an anomaly.
In the theory with phi, yes, that's true.
How you cancel the anomaly by local contact term into the field.
Yes. This is essentially what you do with the green shorts. This is basically the green shorts mechanism. It's like adding this is really nothing but the green cross mechanism. And you can even just think about it as if you, in the hydraulic spring, for instance, this F of I is S, right? And then you have some F right left there. Okay? And then you make this guy transform under this Y transformation, or under some group, right? And then, so this is the axiom. So, okay, this is the imaginary part of S here, right? And then this guy transforms like an axiom. I mean, that's what Green Schwarz did. I mean, they cancel part of the anomaly by changing the transformation rule, right? So this is essentially the same thing, except that here I'm instead of making this guy transform, I'm using the transformation of this Y compensatory rule. Yeah. This discussion, by the way, is in a paper by Kapilnowski and Lewis, and also for the developments. I mean, I have kind of modified these arguments somewhat, but they're essentially in this paper by Kapilnowski and Lewis from 1995, and it's also a paper by Burgess, Quevedo, Derringer, and somebody else. There were five authors. So next time I'll discuss GKP.